Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We gather here once a week at the round our kitchen table here at the station of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. Oh, it's summer. It's good.
Soggy.
It's summer. And we appreciate your ears tuned in to our show here, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
So, yes, the Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
So, we are the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Today on the show, what could be better than barbecue? We're going to be talking about food and a new restaurant here in town. But first, I have a few words about summer, heat, humidity. The fireworks kind of got sogged out here. I hope you had a good 4th of July, but really, truly, things were a little soggy here. We've got some good news, and we've got some bad news from the Donalana Kitchen News Department here. The good news, the women's soccer, USA women's soccer folks did absolutely great. Three cheers to the women's soccer team, and let's also back them for the equal pay thing. I think it's about time, don't you? That's the good news part. And here's the bad news part. Massive fire destroys Jim Beam warehouse.
This is in Kentucky.
Yep. What is more sad than 40,000 barrels of bourbon kind of going up in smoke or whatever?
Major flambe there, boy. Oh, oh boy.
And Donna, I heard you say that as a result of this, anything in excess.
Yeah, this is gross. I saw in the news the next day there were a lot of dead fish from the bourbon that like leaked or the heat or the something floating around in the Kentucky River. So sad story all the way around.
It is. Good news, bad news. Not good at all. Oh, my goodness. I wish to report from the Onion Creek Farm Garden that all of this rain and all of this hot weather, the tomatoes are up and racing. We've got green ones. We've got all kinds of ones. And, yes, they are coming. And the garlic has been very late in forming its paper around the heads this year. It will be harvested later this week. It looks good, folks, but this is kind of late for harvesting garlic. But other folks are saying that, too, that it's just we had a cool spring.
It's a slow year this year.
We did. Today on the Donalana Kitchen.
Oh, fun show. Fun.
We have got some fine guests. Donna,
with real food.
Who's
my
with
favorite.
Us? Who's
All
with
right.
us, Donna?
Okay, so guess what? We have a newly opened, it's not new to Ames, but a newly opened Fabu restaurant in Ames, Cornbread, in the downtown train station, an iconic piece of architecture in town. Just the right business to go in there. I am so happy with the two young fellows we've got here, which are Ryan Newstrom and Ryan and Brian. So Pitmaster Ryan Newstrom and Brian Maloney, the chef. So we got Brian and Ryan and Donna and Lana. Here we go. We are going to have a wingding show talking about cornbread.
Yeah.
Cornbread. Welcome to our kitchen table.
In case you guys have been living under a rock.
Yeah.
It's fun. Lana and I have both been several times. They always run out of food. It's so darn good. Well, they don't run out of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like twice they have been out of ribs, okay?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, which is kind of a major thing. So, Brian, tell us about this adventure. How long have you been open in your new space? And how did you, well, just shortly, how did you get there?
That was a loaded question. Thank you very much for having us here,
sure.
By the way. It's truly a pleasure and an honor. This is such a great show.
Thank you.
We actually just celebrated our one-month anniversary on the 6th, and it's been a crazy 4 weeks, to say the least.
How long has it been again?
But the short answer to your question is I began this process with an idea that I wanted to open up for Ames barbecue restaurant. Over 12 years ago. And I found that at that time what I needed to do was learn how to cook the best barbecue. I grew up cooking. All the men in my family cook. It's my passion outside of my other many passions. Never formally trained, never spent any time in a commercial kitchen, unlike my compatriot over here. I realized the best way to do that was to get on the competition barbecue circuit and go head-to-head up against the best of the best, week in and week out. We're fortunate enough to win the fourth contest we ever entered, I guess. Some of the best in the country.
It?
That was actually at this contest no longer exists, but it was at the World Pork Expo. It was called the Barbecue Lossal, which they have at the fairgrounds in Des Moines. It's my hometown. But there were pitmasters that came from all over the country. This is one of the biggest ones in the world at the time. And somehow we were cooking on these little smokers that loaded up into the back of my Suburban at the time.
Right,
and
for competitions.
Under
a
tent.
Have a kit,
and you're
right?
going up against these guys that load up and roll in and
semi-truck.
Yeah, right. And then lo and behold, we win one of the biggest contests in the world at the time. And just from there, hit the ground running. I mean, it's one thing to be successful, but it's a whole other thing to learn all of the minute details that it goes into creating a good product.
Options for what you want.
Yes.
That's going to make your signature. So tell us, now that you're doing this on a daily basis, kind of what are your favorite things that make your pork so good, that helped you to win the competitions? A couple little tricks.
Did they sign that?
The NDA?
The NDA.
Yeah, just put it out on air. Well, I mean, you must have, you know, you
creating
put your own stamp on the food, right?
Very good question. I think the biggest thing that I can say is controlling the amount of smoke you put on your barbecue is of utmost importance. Most backyard cooks put too much smoke on their meat. They think, oh, the smoke's got to be rolling. I got to hit it. A nice mild smoke that doesn't cover up the flavor of the meat itself is of utmost importance.
Okay. And I have to point out as an older culinary critic, that since I have been tasting your stuff originally from your truck to your restaurant, you have really finessed that a great deal.
Yeah.
It's perfect now.
It is very, very difficult to create the high level of barbecue I want out of a food truck. It's very challenging. And you got to understand, too, the food truck was always a way for us to get to where we're at now. And so now that we're parked in place, there's a lot more opportunity to consistently deliver what I think is a great product.
Yeah. So what are you burning? How much wood? What kind of wood? What's your rig like?
Yeah.
Your stationary.
Yeah. Brian, why don't you tell us what happens in the kitchen here? How does the meat get
there's
this
two
kind
kitchens,
of
first of all. There's the kitchen that Brian's in. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because it's almost like having two kitchens in one. It's not almost, it is having two kitchens or two restaurants in one, really.
Right. You got two captains in the ship here. This is a little unheard of in the culinary world.
But yeah, you know, the front cutting line is its own animal, and then out of the back kitchen, the back lines, it's own animal as well. So, and they're both doing completely different things, but they're coinciding with each other very well, you know. So we're still doing a lot of this stuff is coming off those pits for the back line, but they're just prepared differently than what we would do for the front cutting line.
So what's the difference between the two besides front and back? What goes on in each?
So the front cutting line is more that kind of, you know, for lack of better words, that kind of Texas style, you know, cutting line. When you go into like a barbecue place down in Texas, you know, you stand in line, you watch them cut your meat right in front of you, and that's what goes on in that front line. So the brisket's coming out of the CVAP, slapping onto the board, it's getting carved right in front of you.
It's what you see on your plate, basically.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And then out of the back line is more, you know, plated dishes that are coming out of the back. So for lunch, you know, we have the handhelds. And I think the important thing that we did and we did right was that we can start with our quality of foods on a smaller scale at the very beginning, and you can keep your quality high and as a smaller menu. And then once you get comfortable and you realize what you can and can't do, then you can climb. You can make it bigger. You know what I mean?
Don't make more choices. Your menu is perfect the way it is.
Well, we
it's
appreciate
perfect.
That.
Well, because, okay, you've got your bar menu, which is extensive, and then you've got your just platters of meat with, by the way, the onions and the pickles are... Are you doing the onions yourself?
Yeah, we pickle
really,
all the onions.
Really, really good. Really good. Yep. And then comes with bread. Comes on a tray, right?
Correct.
And you have, what, five? So there's... I'm going to talk about the menu because this it's you've got it down. I really love it. You've got sausages. Tell me what's on those, like, five selections. What
so,
are they?
So for sausages?
Yeah.
No, right now we have two sausages. We have our hot and we have our mild. So the hot is a beef and pork mix, and the mild is a straight pork.
Mm-hmm.
The hot is, you know, it's got... It's kind of like your quintessential Texas hot link, is what I would kind of think. You know, jalapeno cheese, just really big flavor.
In it. I haven't had.
But
it.
The interesting part is the spices that go into the spices that go into that. You know, so you got
you know,
ground beef.
Your own sausages?
Oh yeah.
Woohoo!
Fresh
All right,
daily,
gentlemen.
Fresh daily,
fresh every day.
Okay, so you've got sausages, then ribs, then
brisket,
burn ends, of course.
Pork shoulder, and what turkey. Am I with turkey?
Oh, in case somebody doesn't want the pig.
In case they don't want the pig.
But our turkey is, I'm pretty proud of our turkey. It's
it's really good.
It's lovely. That's
well, I'll have to come try it.
Yeah.
So you get your choice of meat on the tray, and it is served family style, and then there's sides to go with that. And
Correct.
Then there's a whole kitchen menu. Mm-hmm. In the evening, it's about six entrees.
Well, we do lunch, too.
What? And then the appetizers as well.
Correct.
Right.
So we have bar snacks, and then we have shared plates, and then we have a lunch menu, and we also have a dinner menu. And like I said before, the important part was for this thing to become was for this to be a 50-50 mix.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the beauty of that, the thought behind that was, is because you have the cutting line up front, and then you have the back line in the back. And I'm going to continue to call it that, even though it's hard for people to envision that.
Well, it's not so hard if you think about the back, actually, and this is very clever use of the space, is where outside of the train station, between the actual building and the tracks, is where you've lined up all of your smoking and fire, live fire equipment, mm-hmm. which is, that is the back of the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great use of that space because it's so close to the train, it would be too noisy for the food service kind of thing. So you do have the back.
Yep, we call that the back kitchen.
The back kitchen.
The back.
Right.
The back.
The back.
It's where the seedier side of our team hangs out.
You know? Yeah, out there Excuse smoking me. By the fence on the back porch, right?
No. But, you know, you have that going on back there, mm-hmm. which is a whole other team of people doing all of that stuff, you know? So what Ryan has done here.
Is that where you put Ryan all the time?
Yeah, he's always back
there. Yeah, he's the back of the back.
Yes.
So,
or the front of the house. Back and forth, right?
Yeah, I'm constantly doing this all day.
Yeah,
we have a very big team, to say the least. So you have, you know, all those pit crew the back there
that's
doing
a,
that
a
show
lot
up
of labor,
at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Ooh.
Don't leave until, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night. Not the same crew, not the same people, but you know the shifting of the guards, the changing of the guards, and then you have the guys that work on the back line, which is doing all the plated stuff, which is a complete commercial kitchen. You know, you have all this normal stuff that a regular restaurant would have. So then you have all those guys and your dish guys, your sanitation directors, as I like to call them. But you have those guys, and then you have the front cutting line guys, too. So we have a very big team.
And we also have an awesome prep crew.
And we also have our
prep, because everything that we do is made fresh from scratch in-house as well.
Well,
so
and you also have
prep.
A beautiful bar with a lot of interesting cocktails, great beers, good ciders, all kinds of. And tell us what's coming and when.
Well, we are planning, because you have that beautiful outdoor space to the west of the depot space, and so I'd always envisioned that for a large outdoor seating area.
Yep. Just screaming
so we
for
have
it.
A covered patio where it's going to be and an outdoor bar going in under the covered patio.
I mean, that's a pretty elaborate bar space you're building there.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. And it's to service that whole space. I mean, we're planning, I think, 140 to 160 extra seats out there. And we've got swing chairs that are going to hang from the trees. We got lounge furniture out there. This fall, we're going to put a big fire pit out there and patio heaters. What is really important to me, because, you know, you look at, you know, like we were talking before the show began, you go out in the world and you see what everybody else is doing. And then you come back to a place like Ames, and Ames is a beautiful community, but seeing what other people are doing, I always saw that Ames needed more outdoor seating and a place for adults to come and recreate and not feel like you're just coming to get fed. You're coming to have an experience.
Bravo.
And enjoy yourself.
Bravo. Yes. And your staff, the people that were seating me when I went, and I complimented them as I was leaving, and I said, well, this is great. I thought this was like – I thought barbecue meant like, you know, like just – paper plates, and which is good, and peanuts on the floor. She says, oh, no, we're way beyond peanuts on the floor, she says, and which is true. That I want to mention the train station. That has been, I mean, on one hand, oh, yeah, it's a historic train station. On the other hand, anyone who lives in Ames or any other community here in central Iowa, where many trains rip through every way too often, I remember, I'd say 25, 30 years ago, that's where the first Ames Downtown Farmers Market was held, a train station. And considering we were all outside right next to the track, that was a little dicey. And so anytime I heard of event or things going into this train station, I thought, oh, dear, the plates are going to rattle and it's – You have dealt with it very nicely. Somehow you're aware. One is aware of these trains going by, but not disturbing at all.
Did you have to do any special soundproofing in the restaurant?
That was already done years ago through prior renovations. A lot of what we did with our renovation was we just removed layers and brought back, you know, just the original bones of the structure.
And you opened things up?
Added a second floor and
how
more
many
bathrooms.
How many people can you accommodate in your main building? There's a lot of
seats. We have 140 seats inside.
Uh-huh. Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. That's lovely. I want to get back to some definitions here. Smoking, barbecue. What defines something called barbecue? And I don't think it means coming out of a bottle.
Absolutely not. So historically, barbecue came about in the Deep South. Actually, it started, you know, American barbecue, because all cultures and all continents have their own version of barbecue. Yeah. But it originated in the Caribbean and moved up to the Deep South. And, you know, these poor areas, all they got was the scraps, the bad parts of the meat that if you tried to grill it, it would be flavorless and dry.
Well,
and
also
smoking
is a very ancient preservation technique.
Exactly.
I mean, my family from southeast Missouri had a smokehouse for when we butchered the pigs.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so you really have two different things going on where you have the smoke, that's a flavoring and preservation agent, and then you have barbecue, which the way I define barbecue when it comes down to it is really just a cooking technique. So you take a cut of meat, like a brisket, like a rack of ribs, like a pork shoulder. All those have lots of intermuscular fat as well as connective tissue. That through that low and slow cooking process, it breaks down all the connective tissue into collagen and becomes through this magical, really magical process that's really a combination of art and science, turns it into something that transcends your normal protein experience.
So it's long and slow.
Yep. It's controlling temperatures through that process, the application of smoke. You have the salt, you have your flavoring that goes into that, and
it's playing with fire.
Yeah, it's playing with fire, which is fun.
And like I've learned from working with Ryan, and I smoke meat at home, and it was just a hobby of mine. I just like to do it, you know. And I was always battling this, like, okay, I have to have it at this certain temperature, and I have to do it for this certain amount of time. And that is just not true. You know, I had been, like, fighting it the whole time when I should have just been letting it smoke or run the way that it runs.
Ah.
No matter, like, the temperature and that time variant, it's always going to change.
And I suppose, depending on the cut of meat.
Correct.
And
yeah.
So you have to be good at follow your nose and follow your eyes, or meat thermometer kind of thing. You touch it. How do you tell?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of good tools out there. I like to use the ThermoWorks ThermoPen because you get an instant reading. Mm-hmm. But you're usually, you know, like on a brisket, you're using it more as a probe for feel than anything else.
Yep, it comes down to poking it. How does it feel when
too
you
much.
Touch it?
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, like, you know, the cooking temperature, the finished temperature on a brisket is well above well done. I mean, talking above 200 degrees. But it can't get tender until you get above that. Otherwise, it'll be like the most well-done, horribly cooked steak you've ever had. It tastes like shoe leather. Mm-hmm. And that's the magic of barbecue. That's what is so fascinating to me about it.
Yeah.
Now, how do you control moisture? Do you have?
Well, that's also through cooking process, and I don't want to give too many secrets away today.
Don't you dare.
We'll
don't
have
worry.
A
nobody's
going
to be able
Donna.
To copy what you're doing. I promise you.
No, like I said, like a brisket, it also has a lot of intermuscular fat. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is it insulates the brisket throughout that long process of cooking, and it slowly melts away.
So are you using a mechanical rotator, or you're just flipping it around?
It just sits on a grate, and then we control the fire. It's okay. Actually, when it comes down to it, very simple.
Huh. Speaking of fire, what does one burn to get this fire?
Wood.
Wood. Okay. Okay.
And so right now we use Iowa wild cherry and white oak.
White oak.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's because these are woods that are hardwoods that are prevalent in our region. And historically, that's what people do in barbecue. Like in West Texas, that's where mesquite comes from because they have it just laying around.
And – oh, I suppose the cherry. I've heard of apple being used. Do you really get a different flavor or a different – really?
How are you going to make –
yeah, he says.
At the volume – okay, so how much wood are you burning, like, on a weekly basis?
We're going through about 3/4 of a cord.
Cord.
Every week and a half. I mean, it's a lot. And
that, that's going to – how are you solving that issue?
Well, we work with a local
fighting
company.
Fighting pigs is not hard around here, but yeah.
We work with a local company right now. They're out of Kelly, and they come and they bring the wood, and we give them money.
They just find it.
Yeah.
And they promise you they can keep on finding it in that quantity.
So far,
You need your local forester, too, it sounds like. Yes, you do, on staff. So even when you go to are you still doing the competition thing, or are you doing that sort of thing?
Like I said, when we did the competition, it was to learn how to cook the best
barbecue. To learn how to do it,
and to get to where we're going. I would like to get back to it eventually. Mm-hmm, our team name wasn't Cornbread at the time. It was Big T's Q Crew. It was named after my dad because he and I started the team.
Uh-huh.
And we retired that name in 2017. Evolved to Cornbread. So eventually, you know, I'd like to get back out, maybe bring some of my crew, like this guy over here, show them the competition experience because it's a lot of fun. I call it camping with a purpose.
Okay. All right. But, you know, we're talking to two young fellows here who just opened a business that's just booming. They also both have wives and children.
Yes.
Yes.
Young children.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're busy.
But, can't you tell?
But it's great. And they're you know, the kids do grow up and the business does settle down and you will have time for all of this.
That's
very
the hope.
Good. Very good. Yeah. Where did the term or the name Cornbread come from? And this is not Cornbread as in B-R-E-A-D. This mm-hmm. is B-R-E-D, like born and bred.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think of it as like a triple entendre. You know, I mean, it was always important to me to be Iowa identified because I've lived in Iowa my whole life. I'm very proud of this place. I think it's a very beautiful place. And what I'm trying to do is just bring more value to it. And so having that name, Cornbread, obviously you have the corn involved as well. You know, that's more obvious. But, you know, this place was bred from Iowa, you know, bred from this beautiful soil.
It's very clever. We love the name, too.
And it's awfully nice to have something that comes, obviously, from a point of pride. It's turning into a real fine thing. I want to take some time now to remind you that you're listening to KHOI Community Radio 89.1, and this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking good food here. And, oh, yes, you can smell it right through your radio.
We have good food here.
We're talking to the folks from Cornbread Barbecue, Ryan Newstrom, Brian Malone, and we're going to get back to some of their good food real quick. But here's a little note from what's going on out there in the garden, and actually what's going on out there in the road ditches this time of year. The elderberries are blooming, 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 and you can do things with elder flowers. It's not just the berries, which I love to turn into jelly, those big umbrals of purple things that are hanging there just ripe for the picking, but those are a few weeks away. What's coming right now are these big, poofy, white blossoms.
Not to be confused with hydrangeas, which are also coming in.
Oh, right.
You don't eat the hydrangeas.
I don't need hydrangeas, no. This is, you find them out on the road ditches, and they're a wild sort of thing.
I know. I put some in my backyard, and my neighbor, who was quite elderly, said to me, "I don't know what you're planting that for. You can pick that in any old ditch in Iowa."
Iowa sort of response. So, I took these flowers and turned them into two things. I have an elderflower shrub. And
Okay.
That's the lighter colored one.
Okay.
And the pinkier one, I made an elderflower kombucha.
All right, so the shrubby one is the vinegar thing we talked about last week.
Yeah, Donna talked about shrubs a couple weeks ago and last week. Just the fact that people didn't always have Coca-Cola and all that sort of thing. And, yeah, you could add a little bit of fuzzy soda
pretty,
if you'd like.
It's pretty vinegary.
Yeah, yeah. It's making it on your kitchen counter. I took two cups, a heavy-duty two cups of elderflowers, but they are easy to pick, and you get lots of them, and put them in a jar with two cut-up lemons. Two quarts of water and two cups of sugar and a dash, probably you've got too much, of vinegar. Let that sit.
Okay, so on the technique, do you actually pull the flowers off of the stems, or you just stuff the whole umbral in it?
For those, I held up the umbrals and used a scissors and cut off. I didn't want the stems in there.
Yeah, it's a bit tedious, the whole thing.
Yeah, anyway. Well, that's all right. I'm into tedious.
All right, what do you
shrub.
Think? So this is the shrub. I think it's better with, I got to say, the elderflowers, they're pretty subtle.
Well, that's the taste of it. It's kind of weird.
Tastes like summer.
We talked last week about the thing about shrubs and why people love them so much since eons is because the vinegar makes you salivate more. And when you're thirsty and hot, that's what you need to do. So so it works.
And I took the same elderflowers. Now, this is the flowers, not the berries. And again, cut them off.
We're on the kombucha
now. We're going
right?
to go kombucha.
Okay, now this recipe is actually from The Noma Guide to Fermentation by Renee Retzbige and David Silber, which was Retzbige is Norwegian? Scandinavian, some sort, who was like the chef on the planet for a number of years and still is.
Okay. Do you want to read that recipe?
Well, the thing I like about this book, he does, do you like this book too?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, he's got a lot of interesting little. And, you know, chefy tricks can become really annoying. But these I really like. And, I mean, I love Sandra Katz's book on fermentation, too. But Retzbige, he writes like a chef. It's much easier to follow his instructions. So the kombucha elderflower is, it's in grams. Anyway, it's basically sugar, water, elderflower blossoms, unpasteurized kombucha. And then how long did you let it sit?
Well, I used the elderflowers, made a bit of a sugar syrup, put the elderflowers in
it. With heat or not?
Hmm?
Did you?
I didn't boil the flowers, no.
Okay.
No, so just warm.
Let the flowers
sit until it cooled. Again, quite a lot of flowers in the water, and then strain that into a glass jar and put my SCOBY, the kombucha starter. Let it kind of swim around on top there. And I like this better than the shrub. It's got a bit more oomph.
And it's okay, but you know, the thing is, there's this liqueur, Saint Germain elderberry liqueur,
then.
Which is really good. And once you taste that,
yeah.
It's like this never rises
No.
I mean,
it's really subtle.
It's right. Subtle. Mm-hmm. It's very subtle.
This is just summer. Think of this as like a lemonade or a something that, I mean, this is not a liqueur at all. No. Oh, anyway, I've been thinking elderflowers, been watching the flowers bloom, and I thought I'd try it for the first time this year, and I do like the kombucha. Now, the kombucha was, I think, a little easier to make. I'm so used to doing kombucha.
Well, because you're such a master kombucha
and so
maker.
That's that for 7 days on the counter, strained, put in the refrigerator. I have lots of kombuchas kind of. Doing different things. So, yeah, there
well,
you go.
Well, tis the season to play with all of these things.
Tis the season. Three cheers for elderflowers. And, what was that liqueur?
Saint Germain.
Oh, well, let's get back to
that
other
is
things.
A great cocktail mixer, right? Do you guys have anything on the bar with your Saint Germain for this time of year?
Not right now.
Oh.
We did just hire a new beverage director and very
a
excited.
A new beverage director. All right.
He's got some really awesome ideas. I'll kind of keep him in my pocket at this point. But,
lovely. Yeah. I'm
sure something like that would be
very
Ryan,
up his alley.
Oh,
Ryan, you didn't tell us when the beer garden is going to be open. Uh-huh.
Knock on wood, and don't hold me to it, but we're hoping in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh,
okay.
2 weeks.
All right. That will be
lovely.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the inside of the Cornbread restaurant is lovely. And the bar is lovely because it's got windows. It has those big windows that look out onto the parking lot of the old train station windows.
What are those things that you made the lampshades over the bar? What are those?
They're just light fixtures that my amazing interior designer, Casey Bergeson Cruz.
It's Casey Bergeson
Interior Design. Her family owns Burgies here, local company. Went to high school with my wife, Sonia. Amazing, amazing, talented.
They're not an old piece of farm equipment?
No. Well, maybe that was the inspiration of them, but
they look like some old fangled piece of farm, and there's three of them, I think, and they're each a little bit different, but striking. I mean,
Brian,
it's just
tell
brilliant.
Them about your idea for what you were thinking putting inside each of those.
Oh, little canaries?
Yeah, like little...
Live ones?
No.
Well, no.
That'd be a heavy maintenance issue, I gotta say.
No, just like some fake birds, you know, like inside.
Because they almost look like, you know,
they
little
do.
Yeah.
Bird cages.
Yeah. The visuals in the restaurant are fabulous. Now, let's talk about the food.
What do you want to know?
Well, show us what you brought. We always like to munch on all air right. And kind of dribble on the microphones and... you know, chew, make sounds.
So the first one is, we're calling it, I'll do this one first.
Yeah.
So the first one is the pastrami dog.
Oh boy, open the box.
So.
The smell that is coming out of that box. Oh, a pastrami dog.
Hold it up to the microphone, Doc.
Wow.
So what we tried to do here was.
With potato chips. Okay.
Was try
House
to.
Cup.
Nom, 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 nom.
Take what everybody's preconceived notion of pastrami and throw it in the trash. Because and we love pastrami.
Okay.
It's not that I don't love pastrami.
There's
I
lots
love
of bad pastrami out there. I'm with
so
you on
the
that.
Idea has been in my head for a very long time of how to make this pastrami dog. I love hot dogs. I love homemade, like all beef, frankfurters, stuff like that. But I also love pastrami. So we basically made pastrami in hot dog form.
Oh, what a good idea.
So we make all of this in-house as well. So as I've always said...
Okay, I'm diving into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm trying to...
Do it.
So you're calling it a hot dog because it's slightly thinner and longer than a sausage? Is that the...
Yeah, difference? I mean, you know, the idea is for it to... come off the bun about an inch or inch and a half off
oh,
of
I
each
didn't
side.
Know standards
yeah.
over.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
So, when
I'm
we
sorry,
make,
but I'm going to talk with my mouth full.
Here you go,
this
sir.
Is,
you should try it. I think everybody
I
should try
some.
This. So, what the thing about it that I love the most is that everything on that plate
okay,
is
what's,
made.
Okay, what's on the top of it?
So it's a we do since we're partners with Alluvial, make a house made Alluvial stout mustard, and then a house made jardiniere relish, and then tobacco onions and fresh dill.
Okay, so, what's a tobacco? Are you throwing tobacco on the?
So it's just kind of a play on words of how we're doing it. So it's just shallots that are fried at a, you know, in between 275, 300 degrees, shaved super thin, fried at that temperature, and it pulls out a lot of the sugars of the, and it kind of caramelizes itself in the fryer. And when they're done, it looks like kind of shaved, like chiffonade style. Of tobacco leaves, so it's kind of just a play on words.
Okay, I peeled the mustard and everything else so I can really taste the pastrami.
Yeah.
Excellent, dude.
Yeah. The pastrami does not have to be this cold, squashed, flat thing.
No.
Thank you.
What'd you think?
I mean, I love the mustard. Evan, give it. What do you think? Grab a mic for a second.
Well, as a lover of both whole grain mustard and Reubens, especially, I mean, like, that is amazing. That's really, that's a really fantastic and different take on it. Pastrami, it's delicious.
Is this on the menu yet? Or
Yeah, it's on the menu
It's on our lunch menu. Under our handhelds.
Okay, see, we haven't done lunch yet.
So it was kind of like Ryan was getting ready to say, it was kind of an epic adventure to get to the point where we're at right now with that because, you know, he's got his standards of what he likes, and I have mine of what I like, and they're pretty much the exact same thing. And when they wouldn't...
Good is good.
And, well, with the sausage itself just took a lot of finesse to get to where it is now.
Very good.
Because it's a beef mix and a pork mix, so beef is always kind of a little...
So you're doing the pastrami. You're doing the cure... Wait.
So I'm making the sausage, and he's smoking it.
Brian's doing the sausage... And Ryan is smoking it.
All right, so you cure it and then grind it?
No. So I don't use any curing salts in this at all. I use celery juice and celery powders and stuff like that.
Okay.
So when I grind it, I season it, and I let it sit.
Hmm. Oh, and then you grind it raw, and then it gets smoked into the...
Yep, and that smoking is preserving that color. It's doing all of those things. So with that method of sausage making, that's what made it a little bit more difficult to be able to get to where the point that we're at now. What really strikes us the most about that one in particular is that everything on that plate is made in-house, except for the plate.
Except for the plate. Oh, lovely. When one makes sausage and turns it into something hot dog or sausage-shaped, does it have to, like, age, hang, or is it just straight from Brian's kitchen to Ryan's kitchen and it's done? Or is there an aging process?
There's an aging process to it, a natural aging process to it, through the ground after the ground, and then we case, then we hang, and then we smoke it hung. But we don't need to. We smoke it on a smoke stick as it's hung. You know, so you get that really nice curvature.
We have a special smoker just for sausage, basically.
Really? Mm-hmm. And do you? Well, you don't do a lot of beef, so you don't really have to have an aging room, do you?
No, we don't do any of that kind of stuff because we don't. You know, we just don't. But it's actually a pretty quick process.
You know? Because they're always running out of stuff, they wouldn't have time to age anything anyway.
That's right.
What a good thing to do, pastrami.
All right. What's this other?
So this is we're calling it our Beastie BLT. And so it is...
Tell them the story of the bacon.
So the bacon that's on here is actually pickle bacon. Yeah. So I entered a bacon contest at the Iowa State Fair for flavored bacon category. And I did pickle bacon.
I pulled the bacon right off. Okay.
And so
it's not what you think of bacon, but it's better. Better than bacon.
Yeah.
What's better than bacon?
So you get that super kind of dill, acidic that you would, you know, generalize with a dill pickle.
Lana.
But it's in bacon form. So, you know, the whole idea behind...
So it's a thick cut off the belly.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So
you kind of brine pickle the whole belly and then smoke it lightly.
Yes.
Very lightly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So that one it comes on a house-made cheddar and chive biscuit. It's a and drop
this
biscuit.
This is a house-made biscuit?
You got it.
Oh! I'm so excited. We're getting really messy here. My fingers are this is a grease pit.
Then we do
cheddar and chive biscuit. Here we go.
Then we do a smoked tomato jam that has tomatoes and basil and all that good stuff. Mm. Arugula, pickled onions, and a fried green tomato. And then the pickle bacon.
Wow.
And this is called a BLT, but beyond BLT.
We call it the Beastie BLT. So the fried green tomato and stuff is at the base, and then we put the pickle bacon on top of the fried green tomato, and then arugula tossed in olive oil, salt, and pepper, pickled onions, and then the smoked tomato jam on top of that. And there you go. You have it. The Beastie BLT.
This is exciting. I sit down and see the word BLT, and then I see the word pastrami, and I think, oh, okay, here we go again. We are it's definitely not here we go again.
Wait, Lana can't even eat because she has to talk. I'm eating and talking.
Donna.
And these are your pickled onions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
I'm very excited. Oh, now I want to just try the tomato jam.
So it's got a little bit of smoke on it.
I'm
nothing crazy.
It.
How do you smoke the jam?
So you take the tomatoes and we have a cold smoker that it produces a little bit heavier of a smoke than.
It's very good, cooking. Lana. Lick a little this
What's
up.
That? Without cooking.
Without cooking right. it. So then we can do it for a shorter period of time.
It's like a flat rack or a bowl? Or
It's its own entity.
Okay.
It's its own smoker.
Very special equipment.
But
really?
We use it for certain things. and the tomato jam is one of those things. And then once we're done with the smoking process, then it goes into sauce pot with sherry vinegar, smoked paprika, garlic, onions. Cook it down for sugar, obviously. Cook it down for a very long period of time, and then kind of throw it in a food processor for a little bit and season.
You know, the bun on this also is it's almost like a biscuit kind of.
It is a biscuit.
Yeah.
It is a biscuit.
It's a biscuit shaped like a bun.
It's a big biscuit, yes.
All right, so it's not yeasted, then. It's a quick bread.
Mm-hmm. It's quick, yep.
Good idea. We are having one heck of a good time here talking to the folks
yep,
from Cornbread.
I'm just like dribbling greasy, yummy stuff all over the place.
This is KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. You can find out more about our show there. We've got archives. We've got recipes. And you can also find out about all the other fine programming on this community radio station. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking good food, and we're smacking our lips here also with the cornbread. Brian Newstrom, Brian Malone.
From Cornbread. Lana, taste this breaded fried green tomato that came off of a, what do you call the sandwich? The what?
Beastie BLT.
Beastie BLT. Isn't that okay? And she's the tomato queen, right?
I love her. I know she is.
Isn't that good? Lovely. And we're only coming into tomato season. You guys are going to have a fabulous time in the next month or something. Okay, not that you're not now.
But. As we end up here, let's talk some more good stuff. What are some sides and things like that?
Oh, yeah, sides and then the entrees. The standard sides are, there's the pineapple coleslaw, right? Mm-hmm.
We have our cucumber tomato salad, which mm-hmm. is kind of our summer refreshing, mm-hmm. cuts the fatness of the meat, you know, pretty good. We also have our cornbread pudding, which is our most popular side dish. That's where we get the actual cornbread. People think it's not cornbread, but it's just a super moist cornbread.
Ha! Huh. And a little sweetened.
Yep. A little bit more than a little sweet, but yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I know. And then our apple pork and beans.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
Our beans people love.
Our esquites, yeah. too.
And then our esquites, which is our take on a Mexican street corn salad.
Oh, you were out of that the other night. I didn't get it. Yeah.
You know, that's the part about it. We're still trying to figure out a lot of things of like our par levels and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's too bad to be so popular, isn't it?
You know, the important thing is that we want to be fresh. You know, that's the most important thing to us, I think, mm-hmm. on a daily basis is to have fresh food.
Well, it's a good trick because now I keep coming back because I still haven't had the ribs yet. I haven't had the corn salad. You know, it's like, and unfortunately, I only live up the street, so it's really easy to just drop in. And then Brian does a whole set of, what do you do, four entrees every night or something
like
that?
Yeah, we do four entrees. So we have...
Like regular full-on dinners.
Full-on dinners, plated meals that orchestrate in with what Ryan does and what I do. And, you know...
Okay, the other night I had a breaded chicken thigh. What's that?
Oh, the Nashville?
Yeah, describe that one.
So Nashville hot chicken is... fried chicken thigh. We're using fried chicken thigh.
Boneless,
skinless. Comes on over grits.
Very like cheese. Creamy.
Yep. Lots of butter, lots of cheese, mm-hmm. and some hot sauce.
Amen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a smoky slaw, and then house-made bread and butter pickles.
But there was something else. There was another sauce.
Oh, the banana. Pepper sauce.
Where were the bananas in it?
No, like the banana peppers.
Banana peppers. Okay, that's what I thought. It was a little, yeah.
Yeah.
It was perfect. I have to say, I was shocked at how good it was. It was not greasy at all, but it still had a really thick crust on it. The flavor notes were just like you hit them, bing, bing, bing. I loved it. I loved it.
Very good.
When you first prepared that dish for me, it literally changed my paradigm. I mean, it changed my life. Thank you.
I'm here to testify. Okay. All right. Brian to Ryan. Okay. Ryan to Brian. All right.
So, Brian, how did you learn to cook? We learned that Ryan always has family cooks. Just a quick, how did you get here?
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up in central Iowa.
Boone.
Yeah, I grew up in Boone. In the heyday. But my grandparents had a farm in Granger, Iowa. Mm. And in the summers, my parents, both my mom worked two jobs. My dad worked for the railroad, so he was gone all the time. So when I was younger, I used to stay at my grandparents' house a lot in the summertime.
On the farm, me
on
too.
On the farm.
Amen.
And I was so little that I couldn't do anything to help my grandfather out, so I stayed with my grandmother, who cooked three square meals a day for all the farmhands that worked there and tended to her garden and all of that stuff. So I think that that's where it all started.
Brian, that is a good way to grow up, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. Mm-hmm. You never really think so at the time, you know? But
you don't know anything.
When you grow up, it definitely is. It's a part of who I am.
Good. So speaking of local food and local good things, there's a lot of local wisdom out there about how to cook, and we're glad that people pass it on to the next generation because we're all enjoying it. Yeah.
Well, and I want to thank you guys for bringing your culinary talents to Ames. I mean, it just lights me right up. I mean, we've got a nice restaurant scene, but you guys are the... I mean, we have other barbecues, some long-standing ones, but this is different. This mm-hmm. is really, really good. It's the setting, first of all, just you go in there and you've done a lovely job with it.
Thank you.
Then the food. All right, I'm going to give you a piece of old lady chef advice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't change the size of the menu. It's perfect to navigate.
Okay.
You know, in a restaurant, you can only do so many things really, really well, and you are executing these things with a degree of finesse that is going to make you crazy. Plus, an eater gets confused about all of the different things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're seasonally rotating all the other details, then you won't get bored, right?
Correct.
Right? So, but don't make it any bigger. It's perfect
now. It is.
With the options, it's like something for everybody, except maybe the vegans. I don't know about that. But it's a very fine menu the way you've got it.
And if you want to read something, the beer menu, is you can read that all night. So start at the top and work your way to the bottom. So there's lots of things there. I want to thank you guys for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure.
Thanks for this. What'd you call this? The BLT? the what?
The Beastie BLT.
Beastie BLT.
And the pastrami dog.
And the pastrami dog.
Down.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay. This is fabulous.
This is good. This is good. We're talking to the cornbread folks. You have probably noticed the cornbread truck troopsing around Ames the past few years. And now the cornbread truck has turned into the great new restaurant, Cornbread, which was the old Ames train station. That's a good use for that. Lots of good things to come. They're just getting started,
We're
folks.
Just getting
They're
warmed
just
up.
Getting warmed up. Oh,
and you mentioned you're partnering with Alluvial.
Well, yeah.
And I noticed you had the beer on the bar.
We had the wonderful partnership that we had with them with the food truck parked out there for barbecue and beer events.
Yes, quite a lot.
Which was very special to us.
I
love all those people. I love their culture. I love their beer. And all we've done is kind of increase that partnership, bring it into town. We have four of their amazing beers on tap, which is very kind of exclusive to us at this point. Something we're
right,
very excited about.
Right, because they only can produce so much, right?
Yep.
So you're
like, they're kind of like us.
Well, I'm going to harp on another theme that we talk about on this radio, that we have a very vibrant community of, you know, 40, 30, and 40-year-olds who all work together in various businesses around town, and they all know each other. They all support each other. That would be Alluvial and the Morning Bell Coffee Guy and Sharon Stewart, who's going to be opening the Reliable Street Cafe, yep, and Little Woods Herbs and mm-hmm. Mindy at Cook's Emporium. It's like
all amazing people.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see you generation in town.
Thank you for keeping up. Lots of good things coming. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We'll go out with some music by Liz Donaldson and Alexander Michael from their CD Summer Tunes. It's summertime. Yes, it is. So, you've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen, and I want to say a thank you and a rather sad goodbye, but a goodbye and good luck to our engineer.
Evan
Taylor he's off to get married. And now, wouldn't you know? So anyway, we have enjoyed him as our engineer here. He has saved our posterior.
Plus, he knows a lot about beer.
Very good. So thank you, Evan, for all your good work. And he tastes things and comments, too. If you are listening now, consider supporting this fine radio station. We get by with your goodwill. Enjoy summer. Enjoy good food. Enjoy local food. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas with some greasy, sticky fingers here.
We had an excellent engineering one last time by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Woo!